views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good morning, Shasta County. Liam, what in the world was
he
that
said,
music?
He said, Billy Joel. It was definitely you wanted my life and not moving out. But
yeah. I mean, we should go back, start the whole thing over.
We should.
You know, because, Billy Joel, my life, because it's my show.
It's
but
true.
But that's okay. I listen to Billy Joel's My Life pretty much every morning. It's one of my songs on my
good morning song.
on the treadmill. In the morning when I'm warming up. So it just kind of makes me smile. So, Liam, thanks for being here this morning. I appreciate you opening the doors, and I am appreciative to this station, KCNR, 1460 AM, 96.5 FM. Give us the weather.
Yeah, so today we are going to have a high of 93 and a low of 63, and we're going to be in the low to mid-90s throughout the week. So.
Jeez, it's going to get... really,
it's going to get hot fast.
It's going to get really, really hot, and it's going to be here really, really fast. I know my wife and kids went to the Elks yesterday, spent a lot of time at the pool while I was out of town. So it's good, though. It's good. I'm thankful for all the rain we had. I'm thankful for the lake levels are, and obviously the canal being filled up. It's good. We have some water, but the heat is definitely here. First of all, I want to say hi to my Uncle Bud, who's listening in Riverside, California. Actually, it's Yurupa, but or I like to pronounce it Jurupa, but he doesn't like that. So Riverside, California. So hello, Uncle Bud, and good morning. All right, so today's going to be a little bit different. In the past, I've had guests on, but today there's a lot of topics that I want to cover, and I'm just going to pretty much hoard all the time to myself. We are going to take some callers, so if you do want to call in, that number is going to be 530-605-4567. Again, 530-605-4567. And feel free to call in anytime, and then we're just going to chat. So I'm going to jump in a little bit, and we're going to start about this past week's board meeting. I'm going to give you an update on some things coming up as well. We had the UPEC was on strike, and that strike is over, and we gave them a counter proposal. So the next board meeting actually is this Monday. We have a special board meeting to discuss the position of a health officer. So if the public, if you don't know, that meeting I believe is going to be at 3:30 on Monday. So we'll start the meeting and then we'll adjourn immediately to a closed session to discuss that. We had two representatives on the board that were in that process, and they were, I believe, appointed or selected by the last board. Well, I'm positive. I just couldn't tell you how long ago that was, but that was Chairman Jones and then Mary Rickert. So they did some interviews, and I'll be anxious to hear because two of them were there. There's no discussion about it for anybody else. So I'm sure Supervisor Garmon and Supervisor Kellstrom and myself will get to hear all about it on Monday in closed session. So, and I got to tell you, I wish when I was campaigning and running and going to some of those meetings, I always wish that there was an opportunity to watch closed session so you could actually hear some of that. So I got to tell you, I wish the public could be a part of that closed session. I know we can't have discussions out in the open about possible candidates because, you know, there's a lot of HR rules to follow, but it is hard because we're talking about somebody that would be hired, and I would like the community to be just as involved as possible throughout that process. So that board meeting is going to be this Monday, special board meeting, 3:30 in the board chambers at 1450 Court Street. And staying on the topic of new employees, I had a great conversation with our new CEO, David Rickert. He was actually going to be on the show for a short time this morning, but today's his last Sunday at church where he lives there in Illinois with his family, and I didn't want to interrupt that. I didn't want him to have to rush out or be late, so we just said, hey, we'll do it another time. But he's really, really anxious to get here, roll his sleeves up, get started. His first board meeting will be the 30th. I don't know if he'll actually be sitting on the dais on the 30th or if he's just going to be in the building and just watching. But either way, we're excited to have him. He has a wealth of experience. He has a deep background in finances and over 20 years as an elected official. So I think that's it's going to be good. It's going to be a nice perspective for somebody who's been on both sides. He's been on the elected side, then he's been on the staff side. You know, and one of the things that we hear a lot as supervisors is, you know, you hear you got to trust your staff. You got to trust your staff. And I understand that because I think it's important. People that are there in the county, they have a wealth of information. They have a wealth of knowledge. But one of the things, you know, I always bristle at a little bit, and especially now that I'm 4 months in and not just 4 days or 4 hours. But the more you learn, you know, it's like, okay, I'm going to trust the staff, but at the same time, I didn't hire the staff. And that's what I'm excited about with Dave Rickard is I was in the process of hiring him. So I'm really sure of his background. I've got to interview him. I've got to sit across from him. And with the staff we have currently, like I said, we have a lot of great directors and employees. And it's a little bit different of a process trying to get to know those people that you're trusting because, again, you inherit them. And again, I'm thankful for everybody we have, but trusting staff and things like that, I'm a very big trust but verify. And now with AI and all this other stuff, it becomes, I think, more and more important that people are vigilant with, you know, you need to be able to see it, taste it, smell it, touch it, just be able to look right at it and make sure that you can verify it. Because in this day and age of social media and like zero accountability to say anything you want and just get away with it without anybody pushing back, it's rampant. So, again, I'll close this part with David Rickard is going to be starting very soon. It's going to be exciting, and I think we should really, as a community, welcome him with very, very, very big open arms. I have a meeting tomorrow, actually. I'm going to segue this with some HHSA and homelessness, unsheltered. And again, I got to tell you, like, unsheltered, homelessness, or homeless, or unhoused. I mean, there's so many different terms. So I think I'm just going to blanket this and say, when I say homeless, it's not a derogatory term. It's identifying people that do not have a domicile to go back to every night that is their own. So I don't want to offend anybody, but I guess I'm tired of saying unhoused, unsheltered, and going through this because I'm very respectful of people's situation. I'm sympathetic or empathetic for anybody's situation if it's like that. But there are some people that are choosing that, and you can't feel sorry for somebody that wants to do that to a point. So tomorrow I have a meeting with Robert Cronick. And if you're not familiar with Robert Cronick, he sat on the board of the Good News Rescue Mission for quite some time. He was actually the chairperson, I believe, for quite a while. And he left. You'd have to ask him why. We didn't really go deep into it. But he's been working with a gentleman named Paul Abbott with Shasta Thrive. And they've been looking to bring something similar or possibly the actual The Other Side Academy, or sometimes it's referred to as TOSA. So I don't necessarily like saying TOSA because in the educational world, TOSA means teacher on special assignment. So when I hear that, it's conflicting. But the Other Side Academy, they went and visited that this past week. And I was originally going to go, but we had a board meeting on Tuesday night, so I wasn't able to go on that trip. I'm going to be going with Monique Willeen and probably Vice Mayor Mark Mazzano here in the next couple months if he's able to get away. But I know Monique and I are definitely going to be going here hopefully in the next 3 to 6 months. So, but he's going to tomorrow at this meeting, we're going to talk about actionable steps about how we could fast track and get that here. Because, again, there's a lot of great organizations. The Other Side Academy is not the magic bullet. It is not the program that's going to come and fix all of our problems. Because people, I got to tell you, like this issue with the people on the streets is not going away. It's not going to be fixed. We can lessen it. We can definitely give a hand up to some people that need it, and they will take it, and they will run with it, and they will do amazing things. But this isn't an end-all, be-all fix. But I'm excited about this program coming because it's really based in heavy accountability, which, again, the state can't make you do it, but it's heavy accountability with a big, big component of work. And I believe when a person works and they pay their own way, there's something really special that happens in that capacity that gives just the person a sense of pride and gives them this feeling of, you know, they're doing it themselves. And I've seen and talked to more people, like Henry came on the show, I don't know, a couple months ago, and you heard from him, and he's just crushing it, doing amazing things. And a lot of that stems from working and being able to, provide for himself. Now his kid, he has his son back. So we're talking very, very exciting things. So as I segue into the HHSA component, so We had this last week at HHSA, and I won't say we. When I say we, I'm talking about Laura Birch and her team of Sarah Brown, Christy Coleman, a bunch of amazing peer support counselors, and they had it scheduled to go out to two camps. They were going to go to Masonic on Wednesday, and then on Friday go to Mercy Canyon. And if you're not familiar with either of those, we have three. There's many camps, but the Masonic camp off of Lake Boulevard, as well as Mercy Canyon there by Martin Luther King Park off Liddell, I think, and right down the hill from Mercy. Those are two of the larger ones, each easily pushing over 75, maybe even 100 individuals at each camp. And there's going to be, because we're nearing fire season, and RPD has said that they are going to be clearing those camps eventually in the near future. They have to follow, of course, all the processes and protocols. And so on Wednesday, HHSA was scheduled to go out in between 6 to 10 individuals, going out, helping people get resources, and not just taking them granola bars and Gatorade and water. I mean, they definitely do that, but it's really about finding those individuals that are ready to make that transition, get some housing, and move on. So early in the week, the individuals at HHSA found out that the CERT team was going to be at Masonic on Wednesday. So even though the CERT team, and by the way, I will say from the numbers I heard, I'm positive, Barry Tippin said, the city manager of Reading, said nine individuals went into housing from Wednesday at Masonic, and that was the CERT team. But because the CERT team was going to be there on Wednesday, HHSA decided not to go there, even though they're playing closed officers. There's different philosophies, but HHSA and the peer support really wanted no law enforcement presence while they were going to be issuing services and connecting with individuals at the different camps. So they decided to go over to Mercy Canyon on Wednesday. So congrats to the CERT team. And as Barry Tippin reported, nine individuals got housing out of Masonic on Wednesday. So we didn't go to Masonic. So the whole crew decided to go over to Mercy Canyon. Now at Mercy Canyon, Liam, do we have to take a break? Are we good?
We can take a break whenever you want.
Okay, yeah. I'll tell you what. This is probably a good segue right now before we jump over to Mercy Canyon. So, again, when we come back, if you want to call in, 530-605-4567, 1460 AM, 96.5 FM, Your Talk Radio, KCNR. Thank you.
KCNR Shasta is also broadcasting at K243CT Reading.
Signs. That's right. Wonderland Signs has your signs. Big signs. We do them. Vehicle wraps. We do them. If it's a sign, we do them. Vinyl, paint, 3D, murals, big, little, inside, outside, every sign you could want.
Sorry, Bob. Could we sign a monster truck rig? Could you do that again?
When you need sign work, Wonderland Signs is the one. Featuring the highest quality materials, longest warranties in the area, all at competitive prices. Wonderland Signs quality can't and won't be beat. From vinyl architectural to banners to magnetics, from 3D to vehicle wraps to sandblasted to murals. If it's a visual message you want to send, we can deliver. Plus, being that we are fully licensed, bonded, insured contractors, we can install them and other sign shops can't. We even offer financing on many sign types. Check us out online at wonderlandsigns.com or come by the shop on South Market and meet the Wonderland Signs staff.
Mention this ad and get 50% off any pair of magnetic signs.
Wonderland Signs, now celebrating 33 years in business in the North State with amazing attention to detail and quality service. Wonderland Signs.
And now, the Real Estate Minute, brought to you by Vista Real Estate.
When selling your home, you're probably already aware of the marketing tools realtors use to get the job done. But do you know how those tools are being leveraged? Are you getting the best possible exposure? Or is your realtor just doing the bare minimum? Hi, I'm Chad Phillips with Vista Real Estate. When you're ready to sell, make sure you ask your realtor what their vision is for marketing your home. Every home tells a story, and your realtor should showcase that story, utilizing creative photography, aggressive internet advertising, print media, and more. In addition, make sure your property is being marketed to other areas. Before you choose a realtor to represent you, ask if they plan to target more than just local buyers. Interview at least three realtors and make sure Vista Real Estate is on your list.
The Real Estate Minute is brought to you by Vista Real Estate. Call 530-247-0700 or visit VistaReading.com today.
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
All right, we're back. Liam coming through. Billy Joel, My Life. This is Kevin Cry, and this is my show. So, yes, thank you, Liam, for doing that. All right, so we're going to jump back in. So HHSA decided to go over to Mercy Canyon instead of Masonic, where they had planned to go, because there was going to be a law enforcement presence. So on Wednesday, everybody headed over. Now, Shasta Community Health was supposed to be at the Masonic camp on Wednesday with HHSA, but because there was a move and everyone decided to go to Mercy Canyon, the Shasta Community Health couldn't really accommodate that quick of a switch. And again, there are some great people, Brandon, Laura, and all the people at Shasta Community Health. Great teams, great people. What's tough was, okay, so we make that pivot and say, you know, we can't switch our plans that quick. Okay, that's fine. And I've got a meeting with Brandon. I'm going to go out with Shasta Community Health, if not this next week, after Memorial Day, and just understand more about some of the gaps that they have in being able to help those in the community with housing or other services, and where the Board of Supervisors can lean in, or myself specifically. So they couldn't make that transition. But as I talked to Brandon, he said that they were also short-staffed because they had half their team. I believe he said it was half their team, and if I'm misspeaking, Brandon, I'm sorry, but part of his team was out of the area. I don't know if it was Baltimore or they were somewhere at a conference in how to connect with homeless people. And I heard that, and I said, wait a minute. I said, so we were not sending people into camps to connect with them because we're at a training on how to connect with homeless individuals. So we discussed that a little bit, and they had this planned for quite a while. And here's what I'm really, you know, you can go into, and I'm talking about just in general, you can go into someone's office and they've got, you know, 30 framed classes, extra units, different conferences, different programs they've graduated from. And I think that's great. You have to constantly refine your craft, understand how you can do things better, seek outside counsel. I mean, I think we all do that in different capacities. But sometimes I think some things just have to be like, you just jump in and you just figure it out. And I'm not saying where you're going to make a bunch of mistakes, but some things just, I think, require rolling your sleeves up, getting dirty, and going for it. And, so again, this isn't throwing Shasta Community Health under the bus at all, but I'm seeing some of these gaps. So here is where it gets a little crazy is, and I know we have a caller, so caller, Stones, hang on one moment. I'm going to get through this part. So I get to the canyon about 8:10, 8:12, and then Monique Willeen, I gave her a call, and she shows up, and Vice Mayor Mazzano was going to be there, but he was actually having breakfast at the Capitol with the governor and a bunch of other speakers, so he couldn't make it. So Mo and I get there. We're there at 8:15. At about 8:40, 8:42, a couple HHSA peer support individuals show up. I know them by name, but I'm not going to say them just to protect their anonymity. And but actually before those two showed up, though, we had some people already walking out of the canyon because a lot of times in the morning, individuals want, if they have storage over off, you know, by the YMCA or somewhere else, they want to get to their storage and get back before it gets too hot. So we were able to keep them there. And Bill was one of them. He's been in the canyon. I think he's been there, I want to say, a couple years. Mo actually met him at the mission about 5 years ago. He was actually a land surveyor and did a lot of the work at Turtle Bay, you know, 15, 20 years ago. So amazing guy, amazing story. But, you know, he needs to get out of there because it's not safe for him and it's not safe for individuals just living there. So we told him that, and he waited around. So the HHSA individual showed up. So they, two of them, walked into the canyon to start making connections. Well, like 3 minutes later, at 8:47, two RPD officers in, you know, full tactical gear, which they should because they're working. They have their helmets on, the dirt bikes, of course, their jackets, and then weapons, all that stuff like you'd see any other police officer. So they come on dirt bikes and ride straight to the canyon. And I looked at that, and I thought, oh, that's not going to be good because the whole reason we're at Masonic, or the whole reason we're at Mercy Canyon, is because we don't want any law enforcement. Now, at that time, I don't know if there was a call or what was going on. So the two bikes go through, and again, they were disrespectful. They got things to do, and they could have been on a call. So they went through the canyon and disappeared. So, of course, I get a call from one of the individuals, peer support, who was in the canyon, and said, hey, we just had two RPD officers. And they didn't refer to them as park rangers. I don't think they were really officially park rangers, but they're on dirt bikes. They went through. He goes, hey, people are scattering. He goes, and they're no one's coming out now. I said, okay, no problem. So I made a couple phone calls. One of them was to Mark, and then he reached out to Chief Schuler. Well, come to find out, at the end of the road, they were doing a really huge training that day at the end of the canyon down by the, it's not a pump house, but it's down at the end of the canyon, and there's a back entrance behind Mercy that you can get down to that and drive down. So what they had was they had a drone training. So they're flying drones because they have to do mapping because that area will be cleared, and it should be cleared. It has to be cleared. It's not safe. There was already a fire there, and that's right by the hospital. If there was a big fire by the hospital, that's not good for anybody. But in terms of trying to deliver services and talking to people, you have drones flying overhead and RPD going through the camp. Again, not their fault. But what this speaks to me is this is where, as a community, and there are so many agencies, every time I think I have it pretty close to figured out of all the different players in place, more pop up. There's like something else. But I've been at this 4 months. Others have been at this 10 years, 20 years in Reading. And the at-home program that's being pitched to the state, and really it comes down to the 12 biggest cities like L.A., San Diego, San Francisco. And if they decide not to play and don't want to take part in it, the whole program is going to fall apart. But I've said from day one, we don't need to wait for that. We have the players. I mean, Chief Schuler, Sheriff Johnson, the peer support, HHSA, Shasta Community Health, different nonprofits. Everybody's all in and doing this. We just have to keep getting everybody, or I shouldn't say keep. We got to get everybody in that room and say, look, who cares who gets credit for what? We got to get this done because the resources and the money that's being spent, it just continues to grow. The problem continues to get larger. So it's going to be really, really, I think, important for a lot of people to put their egos aside and say, look, this is what you specialize in. This is what you're great at. Stick to that. Don't do these other peripheral things. But the reason a lot of people do the peripheral things is because they get paid for it. And I get it. They want to keep their agency and organization going. But it's very, very evident to me that we have people that care. We have the money to do it. And we have the people motivated to clean this stuff up. And then the people that want to get help, we're going to get them those resources. And then the people that don't want that help and they want to continue that, they got to get out of here. Like, it's just not fair to everybody else. So we have a caller. We're going to go to Stones. Stones, you there?
Good morning.
Hello, sir.
Hey, I saw your recent appearance out of town. Very inspiring, what you said for 10 minutes. Welcome to the restoration of rights for the people. And you were mentioning, you know, closed session items and public not being allowed to participate. So the Brown Act, if you read it, very boring, but it's important. All these closed session matters that you guys hear, they're not mandated to be closed session. They're allowed to be closed session, and that is key to understand. None of that stuff is mandated for closed session. You absolutely can do public employee negotiations in open session. You absolutely can do that. Remember, I did federal, state, local, I was a government employee at all levels for over 25 years. I know the system intimately. And just because it's been that way for 25 years does not mean it needs to remain that way. And when you're spending public dollars, yeah, I absolutely believe it should be done in open session. And related to that, the Public Records Act, of which I do many, a lot of people are not aware of this. You may not, me, any of us, may not get the emails of our state legislators. They are forbidden. And how's that for transparent government? And I did a test. I sent a Records Act, you know, to some random state legislator, and they said, nope, sorry, can't have it. The Records Act says you don't get to know any emails from any state legislator. What do you think about that?
That's interesting. Well, yeah, and you know what? And I'll read that because, again, I'm not going to apologize for being there 4 months. Like, one thing about closed session is I'm asking questions, and you've seen me ask it in supervisors' meetings, and I push back on counsel or our CEO or our acting CEO, Mary Williams, and just say, well, why? Explain that to me, you know? And I think it would be great because what takes place in closed session often isn't what takes place out in front of public, and that drives me nuts. It drives me
nuts. And there may be some legitimate reasons, especially if it's pending litigation.
Oh,
cases.
For sure.
Okay.
Yeah,
I get that. I get that. But, aside from a very few exceptions, I think the remainder of the closed session item should be open session. And you know what? That actually can happen. You just have to want to do it.
Yeah, well, you know what? And thank you for that. And thank you. I didn't know that you saw that yesterday. So thanks for calling, Stones. Appreciate it.
All right, bye-bye.
What he's referring to is let me jump back. So the whole thing with the cleanups and mapping, again, super not RPD's fault, obviously, at all. What's important, though, is that organizations continue to go to another level, work deeper together, and really pool these resources because the money being spent is astronomical, and the second half of our show, we're going to talk quite a bit about some stuff that I've worked with Nolda Short, our auditor controller. She's a rock star. She's phenomenal. So after the break, we'll get into that. But the money being spent, we have to hold everybody accountable, and it's not about calling people out in public. It's just saying, like, let's get accountability, because one thing I'll tell you, too, is I had a great talk with Chief Schuler about buses coming into Reading, and I'll have that in my next board report as well. I talked about it briefly this last time, but I have a couple different programs that it's not so much about bringing them forward as a supervisor, but it's like, hey, what do we think about this? You know, and I'm motioning with my hands as if you could see what I'm laying out, but we have to hold if, or I won't even say if, because it's a fact, people are being brought here, but we have to be able to put actual actions to people being dropped off here. And now that we have people starting to come forward, but we're going to have I don't want to say a call center because what I don't want to do is I don't want to create people just making all kinds of, because this is going to be all volunteer driven. I already have about 12 people that said they would take shifts, not so much just driving around Reading like a citizen's watch or a neighborhood watch, but it's really about who would man the phones and say, hey, you know, I'll take the cell phone for this day. I'll take the cell phone for that day. And what we don't want is I don't want people's time to be wasted because people think it's funny to say, hey, there's a bus dropping people off out in Shasta Lake. And somebody races out there and there's nobody there. So Chief Schuler, myself, I have a meeting with Sheriff Johnson. Nothing scheduled yet, but we spoke this week a little bit about some probation stuff and then some other things that I believe we're going to be able to put together. And because there's a lot of people watching and everyone has a cell phone. So what are the critical things we have to get? We have to get license plates. We have to get some pictures and videos. But what I don't want is I don't want people accosted and I don't want this vigilante. I mean, could you imagine a bunch of you know, senior citizens from, you know, Seattle coming down to see the Sundial Bridge, and then we have a bunch of people running up to them, you know, interrogating them. Like, that's the last thing we want. That's bad for tourism. But we definitely want to catch the nefarious individuals that are bringing people here. And it's not the people being dropped off's fault. It's whoever's sending them there. So I'm excited about working with law enforcement and working with two or three other agencies that have actually expressed some interest in, as they have people doing security work already within the community, what some neighborhood watch type of things will garner those kind of results. So after the break, when we come back, we're going to talk briefly about my trip to Fresno yesterday, speaking at the Freedom Festival. Super, super humbling to be asked to speak at that. But then we're going to jump into a lot of the SB 90 dollars and the state owing us money and the state moving the goalposts on objectives we're trying to accomplish as counties. And the more questions I ask, it just unfurls more questions. And I want to take you on that journey with me. So when we come back, we'll be right back. Call if you'd like, 530-605-4567. We'll be right back.
Signs, signs, signs. That's right. Wonderland Signs has your signs. Big signs. We do them. Vehicle wraps. We do them. If it's a sign, we do them. Vinyl, paint, 3D murals, big, little, inside, outside, every sign you could want.
Sorry, Bob. Could we sign a monster truck read? Could you do that again?
When you need sign work, Wonderland Signs is the one. Featuring the highest quality materials, longest warranties in the area, all at competitive prices. Wonderland Signs quality can't and won't be beat. From vinyl architectural to banners to magnetics, from 3D to vehicle wraps to sandblasted to murals. If it's a visual message you want to send, we can deliver. Plus, being that we are fully licensed, bonded, insured contractors, we can install them and other sign shops can't. We even offer financing on many sign types. Check us out online at WonderlandSigns.com or come by the shop on South Market and meet the Wonderland Signs staff.
Mention this ad and get 50% off any pair of magnetic signs.
Wonderland Signs, now celebrating 33 years in business in the North State with amazing attention to detail and quality service. Wonderland Signs.
And now, the Real Estate Minute, brought to you by Vista Real Estate.
When selling your home, you're probably already aware of the marketing tools realtors use to get the job done. But do you know how those tools are being leveraged? Are you getting the best possible exposure? Or is your realtor just doing the bare minimum? Hi, I'm Chad Phillips with Vista Real Estate. When you're ready to sell, make sure you ask your realtor what their vision is for marketing your home. Every home tells a story, and your realtor should showcase that story, utilizing creative photography, aggressive internet advertising, print media, and more. In addition, make sure your property is being marketed to other areas. Before you choose a realtor to represent you, ask if they plan to target more than just local buyers. Interview at least 3 realtors and make sure Vista Real Estate is on your list.
The Real Estate Minute is brought to you by Vista Real Estate. Call 530-247-0700 or visit VistaReading.com today.
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
Oh, man, Twisted Sister, Dee Snider. I know, Liam, I always say you can always throw that in there because that's one of my favorite songs. And, you know, it actually was more of an anthem for me running for office. But truth be told, I really fell in love with that song around 2000, I think it was 10. And I moved to Oregon, and I was coaching, and I took over a varsity program that was just the doormat of the conference for years. And that was kind of our mantra. And if, again, you know, it wasn't like Twisted Sister and hair bands were, you know, a thing in 2010, but they actually really embraced it, and it was a great season. Okay, so I spoke at the Freedom Festival yesterday in Fresno, and you know, one of the things with and I'm not going to speak a lot of time because I just don't even want to entertain it because I think it's nuts, but the effort to recall me, what it's done is, and I ran on being a unifier and a healer and bringing common sense, fiscal responsibility, and just transparency, supporting law enforcement, but also you know, helping people get help that need it, that are homeless, and then if you don't want help, you got to get out of here because you can't illegally camp. And I would definitely say my compassion's grown. But in all of those things I've ran on, I've delivered on many of those. But one of the things as a unifier and healer, what I found super interesting in this recall effort is I'm getting phone calls, emails, not just from all over the country. Because I don't want to say care less about that. It's nice to meet new people, like-minded people. But it's the counties, the supervisors, even the couple clerks who have reached out talking about what we're doing, how the process is going. So when I was asked to speak at the Freedom Festival in Fresno, Kash Patel was the keynote, and I went on, three or four speakers before him. But really I just spoke a lot about what I've found in a very short time being politically involved. And, you know, and one of the big takeaways for me was this is always going to be a big takeaway for me, is just I'm going to keep pushing people to run for office, get involved. Like Mike Duran from Shasta Union High School District, I mean, he ran because he said, I ran. He wound up winning a seat. He's on the school board there at the Shasta Union High School District, and that's super humbling. And, you know, I want to get 100 people to run over the next 10 years. Doesn't mean they have to win, but, you know, like in Shasta County, there's 24 different boards in Shasta County. There's 48 school board positions, plus, and that's just in education. And if we can get an army of just people that are conservative, that care about our freedoms, care about our liberties, care about what I believe many of us here in Shasta County feel, I think we can keep this a great place and even make it better. And we can be that beacon in the state of conservative values, faith, family. I mean, faith, family, country. I mean, these, and I pause as I say it because it's just like I can't believe. I mean, if you say the flag salute, or you tear up during the national anthem, you're called a right-wing extremist. And if you're raising your kids and just focusing on your business and trying to do the best you can, you're a right-wing extremist. I mean, it just everything to me is so sensationalized. So speaking at that event yesterday was humbling because it's motivating a lot of other counties. And again, as we talk and we go into the Null to Short stuff about the SB 90 dollars and how I arrived there was obviously the election department in terms of the vote to cancel the Dominion contract. And again, it's never been about Dominion. It's been about just machines. And again, it's never been, wasn't something I ran on. It wasn't something I was looking for. Like everything else, like every other vote, something's on the agenda. I read it. I read the staff report. I gather as much information as I can. I reach far and wide to get different points of view, different interests, different opinions. Then I vet where those opinions are coming from, get the information. Then I pray about it. And after I pray about it, if I have peace, I make that decision, and then I move on. I don't live in the world of regret or in the world of second guessing, because if you have a process and you stick to that process, it feels great. It feels great. And I can tell you, there have been times in my life I have not stuck to my process. You know, it's ready, aim, fire. There have been times that I have said, ready, fire, aim. Well, you can't do it that way. And in those instances, that's when I've learned my biggest lessons. And I always make sure that I refine making sure that doesn't happen again. And I can tell you, coming out of COVID, I have been a very, very ready, aim, fire individual. It has been, that process has to be my process. And I ritualize my mornings when I wake up. I'm in the Word. I go to the gym. I come home, have my coffee, get showered. Then I study with my son a little bit. And then either my daughter takes him to school or I take him to school and the day starts. And that routine has served me very well coming out of COVID. So in the process of understanding the election dollars and where our money could be spent, and I have a lot of stats. I mean, obviously, our clerk put out a really thick document that's on the homepage. I have lots of stats, and I was going to go through all that today, but I think that's going to deserve an entire show because I believe, by my numbers, it will cost about a buck eighty-five a vote to hand count. And I'll prove those numbers. I'll show those numbers. And again, this is work that I have researched. I've put my own little team together. And I'm not talking about, I'm talking about people in Shasta County who, understand math, who understand process, who understand private business. Again, private business. How can we do this? Because if it's $1.85 a vote right now, I think we could really get that down lower because that's what you do in private industry. You figure out your hard deliverables, what you have to do, what's the product or service you're going to offer, what's it going to take, and now how can we streamline it and use less staff, which means less resources, less money, but still deliver the results. So right now that totals at $1.85 a vote, and if you extrapolate that over, I'm not talking about $1.85 a contest. I mean $1.85 a ballot, and I'm going to be working on those numbers, and probably my next show will be based on that. So when I went in to ask Noel DeShort about the money we currently spend and see if the numbers in the election department and where other things, kind of flush out where there's other money that may be election dollars, but it's not necessarily allocated to elections. I stumbled onto the question about, well, what is this in 2012 and 13? What's this, $1.2 million, $468,000, almost $470,000 in 12, 13? 174,000 in 11-12, 103 in 2010 and 11, and about 90,000 in 2009 and 10. So as I look at that, and then you go up one more line, and that was for permanent absentee voters, and then you look at the absentee voters, 190,000, 300,000. So that totals, really close to 1.2 million. Well, I said, well, wait a minute, where's that money? Why have we not got that money? And she said, well, SB 90 is when the state mandates you do something, but they said, hey, we're going to make you do this, but it's okay because we're going to pay for it. Well, guess what? They haven't paid for that. $1.2 million. All the people that are just screaming and yelling that the board majority, Chair Jones, Supervisor Kelscher, and myself are costing untold millions. Well, that's not true. We haven't cost anything of any of the sort like that because what we've done is we took a lease payment and we're now purchasing stuff. So over time, obviously, that it's crazy. If you love lease payments and you do lease payments, then that would make sense to you. For me, I don't like leasing things. I like to buy it. Maybe you finance it, but you buy it. You own it outright, so there's an end to it. And we're going to own that hard equipment. So that's crazy when they say it's millions because it's not. We're still flushing that out. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to play a clip from Noel DeShort that's going to talk about SB 90 dollars. And it's going to be about 6-7 minutes, but I'll stop it a couple times. But it's going to be really telling for you if you want to understand how the state really operates with our money. And my question is, why are people not screaming and yelling about that? Because she said, and you can go ask her, she said, to her knowledge, I'm the first supervisor. And this isn't about credit. This isn't about credit at all, because I stumbled on this as I'm asking questions, looking at budgets. But she said, I'm the first supervisor, to her knowledge, in about 20 years that is asking some of these questions and what can we do to get it back. So I've already reached out to other counties and said, hey, what are you owed? And they're looking that up. And we're gonna do some work on this because I don't like being owed money, especially by a state and we talk about Secretary of State and elections. It's like, hey, if this is going to be as expensive as you say, which I know it won't be, but if it is, then we need to get that money back. So, all right, let's go ahead and play the clip, Liam. And this is Noel DeShort speaking at the board meeting about SB 90 dollars.
Okay. Good evening, Chair Jones, members of the board, Noel DeShort, Auditor Controller. So I did have a little bit of time today to look through some of the SB 90 issues. And for those people that are not familiar, the SB 90 mandates are when, in kind of in general terms, when the state comes along and they mandate that a local government either do additional functions or whenever they pass something off financially to us and make us responsible for those things, they are required to fund those items that they pass off to local government. And so there were a lot of issues in the past with the state paying local governments. And so they would pass those functions off, but then they wouldn't put it in the budget and they wouldn't send the money to the counties. And so in the past, we've been owed a lot more. I did look at it statewide, and the state does owe $1.7 billion to various county, school, college organizations. So it's a big number. They have cleaned up a lot of it, but there's still a lot of additional amounts from prior years. So Shasta County currently is owed $2.2 million. We do have a listing of that. We do track that. We are required to record it as a receivable, have it appear in our financial statements. And most of those amounts are prior to 2013. Actually, almost all of those are prior to 2013. So they are staying current on what we're doing now. And so most of our mandates now are between like $300,000 and $500,000 a year that we're claiming to the state, and they are staying current on that part of it. But this $2.2 million is prior to 2013. The way the code reads is if they appropriate it, then they're required to pay us by October of the next year. But what they're doing is they're not appropriating it, or they're not appropriating enough. And so they'll put it in there in their budget, and then it'll be just a fraction of what's needed to pay that off. So
the 3 years never starts.
Yeah. Well, that's for the audit part of it, too. So that's the interesting thing. For these claims that are sitting out there that are $2.2 million, and the audit period, so they have 3 years from the date they make payment to audit it. So they're not making payments. The audit period, like, literally never stops. And so one of the trends that we are seeing is that they are going out and starting to audit some of those claims now, and the recovery from the local agencies is pretty hefty. So that's one of the ways that they're reducing that liability is they're taking back some of that from doing some of those audits.
So what you're seeing here is you're seeing the state kick the can down the road, because once they appropriate it and they've got 3 years to do it, so, you know, we're at least 3 years out from getting that. And that's troubling, because our auditor's office, Nolda and her team, still have to do that work. They still have to do that work. What you're going to hear is eventually they can just wipe it away anyway. So we're doing all this work, and that work are resources of time, and the time equates to money that you and I are paying for people in that office to continue to do these reports, even though the state may never even have any desire. I won't even say desire. They may not have any intention of ever even paying us. And, you know, and it doesn't matter if this was roads, I would be frustrated about it. But the fact that we're owed over $1 million to elections and the hot button of a topic that is right now, that infuriates me, because where is everybody screaming and yelling about that? I'm sorry. Go ahead and play it, Liam.
For various counties and schools, colleges. So I did look, and it looks like in this next year they have $157 million funded for mandates that's proposed, but I don't know where that will end up. Right now that's in the May revise. Last year it was $72 million. The prior year was $44 million. It's a problem. It's a problem across the state. They're in compliance with the way that code reads, but it is an issue. If we do get that $2.2 million back, it will be one-time money, because, like I said, they are staying current on the stuff that we're currently claiming. And I think in, like, 2013, they went through and they suspended 60 of the mandates. So they now have legislation that says that if they don't fund a current mandate, then they have to suspend it.
So you see what's happening. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
So what they do is they say, well, we don't have it in the budget.
So this next part, and I'm gonna tee this up. What you're gonna hear is how the state tries to make the county the bad guy. And this is what frustrates me, right? They said, hey, you're gonna do this, and so with elections, permanent absentee voters and absentee ballots, they say, hey, we're gonna do this, you're gonna pay for it, but I mean, we're gonna do this, you pay for it, but we're gonna pay you back because we want you to do it. And, so we do that. They owe us over $1 million. And then they say, hey, you know what? We're just going to make it a law. So take the mandate away. You got to do it on your own. It's going to cost you that amount of money. And, but we're not going to pay you back. But they won't say that because they're in compliance. You heard her say that, right? We're in compliance. Well, guess who makes up the laws of the compliance? The government. So the government says, hey, we're doing everything as to law. Well, you made the law. And you also have the law that can say, you know what? We're just going to wipe that away. No big deal. And so listen to this next part about how egregious this becomes when they take away a mandate. So go ahead.
So we're going to suspend it for this year. And then politically, as a county, we have to decide if we're going to stop performing that service. And so the one that I like to use is Megan's Law. So that happened to us. Mm. We were doing Megan's Law, and the state comes along and goes, it's suspended. Now the county has to decide, Are we going to stop reporting people? Or are we going to stop doing all of those functions? So it becomes a political move, and the county has to decide, are we going to fund it and keep doing it? Or
go ahead and pause that.
Doing it?
So imagine that, right? So Megan's Law, which is extremely important, and I think that is that's something that, again, and she's going to get more reports from me on the process of some different things that we've let go and some things we've paid for out of our general fund that the government has told us, you know, we'd sure like you to do it, or it's a mandate, you have to do it, but we're not going to pay for it. But Megan's Law is one I think we can all get behind. I mean, there's another one about euthanizing animals, which, again, if you're a big animal lover, you're going to want that time frame to be as long as possible. But when it comes to Megan's Law, could you imagine if a county said, all right, you know, you're not going to pay us for that anymore, so we're just not going to report on it? Well, that would be a political nightmare, but I don't care about the politics. I care about the people. I care about the safety of the residents, not just in District 1, but across all of Shasta County. So I think that's a marketing thing where a county says, hey, look, these are things that we're doing for you as the county that the state's not paying for. And again, Megan's Law, I think everybody can get behind that. And just so you know, some of you that are texting me, if you want to talk, you got to call in 530-605-4567 or that have emailed me. Again, 530-605-4567. We don't have much time left, but the one thing I really, really want to make sure we conclude on, and this is the thing about being the unifier, the healer, et cetera. And again, it feels very self-serving, but I wasn't pushed out in front. There was a group of people that have shoved me out in front. That's fine. You want to take this horse out? Let's go ahead and ride this horse and see where we go with it. Because what's happening now is other counties have said, hey, you know, we, and these are new supervisors, and you know, and we go to CSAC, and that's, they had a new supervisors institute. And I got up and spoke pretty early because we were all supposed to introduce ourselves. We did that. Many people gave a little bio, and I didn't do that because a lot of times these meetings, like I want to get whatever I'm required to do and then just bail because I'd rather be doing stuff here in Shasta County. And at the CSAC meeting, though, as I met some very like-minded supervisors across the state, and more importantly, like in Northern California, in the 13, 15 most northern counties, people have now reached out and said, hey, tell me a little bit more about the SB 90. What are some questions I can ask of my auditor controller? And you heard Nolda say it's a political thing. It's a political thing once things are suspended. And do you want to go after that? Well, I don't care about the politics. I don't care about other offices. I'm not saying I don't care about the sanctity and the importance of supervisors or city council individuals or planning commissions, et cetera. But in terms of, I mean, I'm the same guy today as I was 2 years ago before I did any of this. The difference is I'm educated now at a different level about how some of this stuff works. And if the state owes us money, and I shouldn't say and if, because I know it, we have a lot of supervisors that say, hey, look, let's go as a group. And I know you have your assembly person and your Senate people. But remember we talked about at the top of the show about you got to trust your staff, you got to trust your staff. Well, okay, you got to trust your assemblyman or your assemblywoman, or you got to trust your senator. That's all well and good. But, you know, what if your senator or assemblywoman or congressman, you know, is doing things that you might not agree with? And I'm not saying that's the case here. I'm just saying for me, I don't know any of them really well. I've had conversations with each of them, very brief, very superficial, with the exception of Congressman LaMalfa. I actually, he's thrown his support behind me, speaking out very, very, boldly. And again, congressmen don't usually go down to, you know, down ticket, down races, but he's super against this recall. And he's super against this recall because he doesn't want Gavin Newsom meddling within his congressional district of handpicking leaders. And I agree with him. And he's also very supportive of me personally. So it's kind of double-edged, and I appreciate that. For me, we're going to get other counties, and we're going to start looking into elections, especially because there are other counties now that are saying, hey, we're watching to see how you're going to do it and how that shakes out. And again, this wasn't my sponsored mission. This wasn't something I ran on. It wasn't necessarily even on my radar. Again, Supervisor or Chairman Jones brought it up. Like everything else, I reach out. I get as much information I can from both sides. And when I say sides, I'm not talking about partisan Democrat, Republican, non-party preference. I'm talking about just different opinions. And then I form my, as I'm forming my own, I pray about it, and then I have my decision, and I move on. And then everything that's ensued has brought us to where we are now. And what I believe is if the state has shorted a bunch of other counties as it relates to SB 90 dollars in their elections. Now, again, this money doesn't go to elections. This money goes to the general fund, because our general fund has already paid for it. So the music's queuing up. Liam's trying to boot me off. I don't blame him. He's got a job to do. Shasta County, District 1.